Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Wednesday. I'm your host, Ryan Abraham, along with Chris Trevino, sitting right over there. If you're listening on the Peristyle Podcast feed, thanks very much. And if you're watching on YouTube, our little tunnel vision version, our simulcast of the Peristyle Podcast, we appreciate that as well. Wherever you are, you can like and subscribe to the Peristyle Podcast or tunnel vision or our YouTube channel. You want to smash that like button? Don't just hit it once though, because if you hit it too many times, Chris,
it'll unlike.
So you want to smash it, which our buddy
or
Chip Patterson
end on
said.
A smash.
Yeah, you can hit a few times, whatever you want, but we want that end up as a smash. Like. Subscribe on the podcast feed and all of that. That helps. Tell your friends who are USC football fans. They want to know what's going on with the team. We do these year round. My mom was in town last week, so we didn't do a show. Chris was holding down the fort with the 2-star. Recruiting composite podcast, and he does a great job with that. Those have been really popular. They're going to record one a little bit later today. But today, we got a lot of stuff to talk about in the USC world. But I do want to welcome in my co-host for the show, Chris Trevino. What's up, Chris?
I'm talking to sources, so I'm just live, so you can see me. So I'm just dancing around a little bit. So sorry, I wasn't paying attention. I feel like you just introduced me. So I'm Chris Trevino. What's up? We took a break. We're back. Ready to get back into it. We had some people hit us up, like, when's the next podcast? So the next podcast is now. So trying to deliver you that sweet, sweet podcast content.
We're trying. We're trying our very best to do that. And if you have any questions or comments for the show, you can email us, podcast@uscfootball.com. You can also call or text us. We got a text message. We got a voicemail today. Keep the voicemails brief if you can. And we got a funny one today, 424-254-9141 is the number. And I've mentioned, if you're listening on the Apple podcasting app, if you follow us, which is subscribing to us, and leave us a 5-star review, that does really help to grow the show. And we're just going to move on from there. We got a lot of different topics to talk to before we jump into all that. Wanted to thank our sponsor, Trader Joe's, who've been great to us over the years. Was over there, Chris. I went a couple times. My mom was in town. My mom walked over to Trader Joe's because it's in Hermosa. Picked up a bunch of different things. I love those the pretzels that have the peanut butter in the middle. I don't know whoever thought of this. It's brilliant. I love pretzels. I love peanut butter. You put them together. Those are a great snack. We put together a bunch of cheese and some like slices of like salami and stuff to make a little charcuterie board. We brought it to the desert over the weekend. So we
fancy
had all
word.
Our... I'm sorry?
Fancy word.
Very fancy word. So we brought all our fancy stuff from Trader Joe's, which was a lot of fun. We love going to Trader Joe's. I like we talk about the mimosa thing. Are you a mimosa guy?
I think we've dabbled it because about brunch and stuff. Just want the waffles. I'll have the mimosa, but I just want the waffles.
Gotcha.
Yeah, we talked about it, yeah.
Nice. I buy the Prosecco over there. It's like $14. They have some pretty good pineapple juice. I'm more of a pineapple guy. So got a whole bunch of stuff from Trader Joe's when my mom was in town. So thanks again for them sponsoring that. Hey, Chris, speaking of waffles, drove back from the desert with mom. I don't know if you've ever been. You're down in the LBC, and I think Snoop Dogg's a big fan of this. Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles.
Oh, you went to Roscoe's?
Not a sponsor. They could be.
You just want to talk about Roscoe's. Have you ever been before?
Yeah, yeah. I've been a bunch of times. Okay. Yeah, I love going there. My mom actually mentioned it. I'm like, we could stop by on the way back. We went to the one in Inglewood. And it's tough because there's like a Randy's Donuts and a Roscoe's like within
it's
a couple
just a
blocks.
Heart attack block.
I mean, I was like, I can't get both, can you? I think I've done it before once, but.
Oh, you can. I'm sure you did. I feel like you're being monished right now.
I have a big sweet tooth. Yeah, but those waffles are really good. The fried chicken's really good.
I get the Obama special.
Do you? So you go with the wings?
I go with the wings. It's just less intimidating than a giant like breast or. It's just a lot of chicken, and I just like the perfect balance of those three wings with the single waffle. It just feels that's enough chicken to waffle ratio, and it always ends up being perfect. So that's what I get.
Nice. I usually get the SCO special, which is the number one, which is basically, you know, quarter chicken, two waffles, with like an ice cream scoop of butter.
You're making me hungry.
I know. It's really good. I just had some poke. I got my. More than a non-sponsor, my Just Pokey
this
t-shirt on.
This is just
on.
A food-heavy show right
I
now.
I walk into Just Pokey here in Redondo. It's like right down the street, and I have their t-shirt.
Again, not a sponsor.
Not a sponsor. They could be because I eat there a lot, and they're like, oh, great shirt, dude. I'm like, oh, thanks. I love the Hawaiian food stuff. Anyway, let's get into the show because we have some. Yeah, we have some breaking news. So the
as I was driving in here,
yeah,
this hit.
Yeah, I just saw this, so this is kind of good content for us because it's going to be kind of the main thing of the show. So the Pac-12 announces a change to the football championship game format. So the release came out today, Wednesday, May 18th, and I'm going to give credit because the first tweets about the NCAA backing off on the requirement, essentially what this was is they said, hey, you want to do a championship game, you got to have divisions and split things up, and so you can't just have like 10 teams, and then you're picking, you know, so they made this rule. So you have to have a championship game with the divisions. Once teams got bigger than 12 and 14 and stuff, it makes things a little complicated. The Big 12 has 10. So they allowed, if you do a round robin format like the Pac-12 originally had with just 10 teams and you'd play everybody, that's the round robin, then you could do a championship game with the two best percentage, you know, records as far as that goes. So the top two teams there. So you could do that. Well, now people are worried about, well, hey, you're going to make the playoffs going to expand. You want to make sure the best teams are playing in your championship game. You don't want a situation where, you know, I think it was like a 7-5 UCLA team played, I think Oregon or something in the championship game. I think it was the year USC couldn't go. And what
it's
if UCLA?
Not a great resume point
right.
when you're trying to look as sexy as you can for the playoff committee.
Right. So what if UCLA beats Oregon and then you have an 8-5 team, they're not going to make the playoff, right? Or where they would get an automatic bid or whatever it was. So you want to have your best teams in there. So I'm going to give George Kliavkov and the Pac-12 credit because they were basically – they had everything. Like when we know a commit's coming and we have all the stories ready, George Kliavkov had everything ready. Like as soon as this was announced, boom, Pac-12's changing the format. So the release is the Pac-12 conference announced a change to how it will determine the teams that qualify for the Pac-12 championship game. Starting in 2022, so this isn't next year. And the first couple tweets I saw, Chris, were like, starting 2023, you're going to start to see championship games change. Nope. Pac-12 says we're doing it this year. The two teams with the highest conference winning percentage will face off in the championship game. The weird part is the change would have resulted in a different Pac-12 championship matchup in 5 of the past 11 years. So about half of the time, this changes who would play in the championship game. So this is not an insignificant move, Chris.
No, I mean, you could look back at the list. I'm sure you have the list up, but there's lots of changes that would have happened. And two specifically that would have sort of altered USC's Pac-12 championship berths over the past couple of years. Obviously, the 2015 one would be the most significant. Under these new rulings, USC would not have been playing in that Pac-12 championship. It would have been Oregon. Is that correct?
Yeah, so in
2015, I think it would have been Oregon. Am I? No,
yeah,
not
it would
Oregon.
Have been. Yeah, USC was number USC was number 20, and Oregon was number 16. Yeah, so it would have, you know, the way it was is Stanford number 7 versus number 20 USC. in the new format, now the way they're going to do it going forward, it would have been Stanford and Oregon, two teams from the same division plan. And then the other one that would have affected USC was when USC won in 2020, when they won the division, they actually would have played
2020 season.
Yeah, so the 2020 season, which was the COVID season, they didn't get to play Colorado because of COVID, and Colorado actually had the better record. And so they didn't get to play Colorado, but then Colorado lost the game. USC was going to go, but it would have been USC and Colorado. Colorado was number 25 at the time. And Washington got in because Oregon should have been in. I'm sorry, no, Washington won, and they Oregon, couldn't play.
That was a whole hodgepodge of chaos. Washington obviously had their COVID issues. Oregon stepped in and then sort of waxed USC in that that championship game. And it was just like a really weird season. I know a lot of people like try to forget that season or whatever. But nonetheless, what would have happened if, you know, USC played? That Colorado game actually would have happened in a Pac-12 championship setting. Like, what would have been the outcome? Could they have won the Pac-12 championship in 2020? Would Colorado would continue that, would you say, breakout season and sort of pull the upset? I don't know. A lot of things, a lot of moving and changing parts that would have happened if this was, you know, a rule that had happened, say, 5 years ago or 6 years ago, whatever.
Yeah, that was a weird year because USC could have had like three different opponents, right? It was supposed to be Washington, then ended up being Oregon. This new rule would have made it Colorado. There's some interesting ones. Like I mentioned the UCLA one. So 2011, when USC wasn't eligible, UCLA was in against Oregon. It would have been Stanford against Oregon. Stanford was actually number four at the time. So that would have been a really good example where you had two top 10 Pac-12 teams that weren't going to get the rematch. But in 2011, they would have. UCLA was only in – they've been in the conference championship game twice, 2011, 2012. Under the new rule, they wouldn't have been in there either time. So they would have been eliminated both times. So that's kind of interesting. And it would have been Oregon versus Stanford, those 2011 and 2012, both of those times. And then 2015, it would have been Stanford and Oregon again. So that comes up. The funny one, 2018, it would have been – it was Utah and Washington. It would have been an Apple Cup rematch, Washington and Washington State. So some interesting ones. I mean, the fact that five of the 11 – championship games would have been changed. That's a significant move from the Pac-12.
I think it's just going to be interesting because now they are officially the second Power Five team that does not have divisions, along with the Big 12. Obviously, they only have what 10 teams in their conference.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting move. It does add a little bit more. I would say a little bit more excitement to the race, just because you know it's just like. It's anyone's game. It's the top two. Get to the top. You don't have to really necessarily worry about the divisions, obviously. And, you know, it kind of takes some pressure off of those big – what were we considered those big interdivision games. You know, every year we talked about going to the season how the Utah game is usually sort of the make or break for USC during the division schedule. So now if you lose to Utah, it's not the end-all be-all because, again, just the top two, best winning percentage. You still have a shot, even if you take, you know, a loss to Utah or maybe to I usually go Arizona State because they've been surging, but now it's like all the way in the dumpster fire. I don't even know who my second team is. Stanford is Stanford kind of my second sneaky team.
For,
I don't know,
for 2022.
Yeah, I guess
sneaky, like what's close to the bottom. No, they're awful. Like but you bring up a good point because people are like, hey, can USC win the Pac-12? It's like, well, you got to win the division, and Utah's the best team in the conference. They waxed Oregon twice last year. They get just about everybody back. Cam Rising is a star. You saw him on the Coliseum field. He just, you know, he went absolutely crazy. I think Utah is the team that you want to beat. USC has to play Utah in Salt Lake City this year, so you could see them going from 4-8 to 9-3 or something, but not winning the division because Utah is in it. And the Pac-12 North is a little bit more of a mess. Washington was bad last year. They fire their coach. They bring in Kalen DeBoer. They're going to be making some changes there, obviously. Oregon, they bring in Dan Lanning. We like to call him Lan Danning on the podcast of champions, but Lan Danning. It just kind of sounds cool. You got Bo Nix coming in as transfer quarterback. It's not like, they still have a really talented roster, but, there's questions there too. Washington State made a change at their quarterback. I think they could be sneaky good. They would be my sneaky team probably in the North. Oregon State busted through last year, got 7-5, you know, went to a bowl game for the first time in like, you know, a century or whatever it was, not that long, but a long time. You know, Jonathan Smith in his fifth year, but you know, they seem kind of like a 7-5 sort of team perennially. You know, this could be a thing where, and Stanford's going to be terrible. We'll see where Cal does. Like they missed out on a bowl last year. They should have made a bowl, but they had that COVID game against Arizona. But there's no one that's like standing out as like, wow, that team's going to be really good. So this could be a year where maybe it's Utah and maybe it's USC with the two best. And even if USC loses on the road to Utah and Salt Lake City, they end up 10-2 or something. And they have a, you know, they're the number two team. Like Utah's 11-1, USC's 10-2. And maybe Oregon's like 9-3, USC's going to the championship game. So I think that's a actually plausible scenario. USC has their own things to fix, but the way they're turning over the roster, there's a lot of, I think there's a lot of optimism there that they can come up and maybe not get Utah in year one, but they could, you know, in year two or three. But now that you don't have to worry about the best team in the conference is in your division, you could easily be the second best team in the conference and get a shot at Utah playing them in Las Vegas for the championship game.
You just like how it's lining up for USC in 2022 with Lincoln Riley first year, all the changes, new talent coming in, new schemes, this new schedule division shakeup. It bodes well. It just gives USC another point of emphasis when people are going to, you know, hype them up for this season. Like, hey, Utah game, you can get by. You can take a loss there and still make it up to the Pac-12 championship. So, just a lot more, I would say, momentum for the 2022 season. And this is sort of an off question, Ryan, but
yeah,
famously, let's say this rule change had happened 4 years ago or something like that. What would Clay Helton have said in his famous line, you know, we got to win the Pac-12 South? What would he have said? We just got to get the second best win percentage? Like, what does he say at that point?
Yeah, that's
what's a good point. What's the line there? I don't know.
I know. Real quick though, so if USC does go and lose to Utah in Salt Lake City, the rematch would be in a neutral site, Las Vegas.
Now, sure.
I went to the game this past year and they packed the place. I mean, it was like a home game for Utah, so I think a lot of USC fans would go. But you know, that's definitely the case. Your point about like, yeah, Clay Helton talked about championships and was always very vague. And people are like, are you talking about national championships? You talk about Pac-12 South championships. And that goes away. And I think Stuart Mandel tweeted this out from The Athletic. One of the negatives about this is there was something to play for. If you remember, like Utah came into the Pac-12 and sort of like the goal is, hey, you want to try to win the division. Colorado won it early. Missouri joins the SEC and wins the East a couple of times. I think their first couple of times in there when Georgia wasn't as good and Florida, those teams weren't as good. That's something, you know, like for Missouri to be like, hey, we're the SEC, you know, we're SEC division champions a couple of times. That means something. When Colorado, I mean, they pretty much had crap, 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 win the division, crap, crap, crap. You know, that was something that they won the division. With Colorado, let's see, that year was... they won the division in 2016. Okay, they would have still been in the championship game. They played, you know, they were a top 10 team, number 9. They played Washington. So, I mean, I don't know. You're like, hey, we made the conference title game. I guess, I don't know if that's a little different than we're like division champs or whatever.
Right. No, it definitely like diminishes that, especially if you come in second. You don't get to claim, you know, you don't get to claim that we won a division. I don't think. Do they give rings for the Pac-12 South?
I don't think so. You shouldn't.
Maybe get a hat. You don't get a hat. You don't get a hat, Ryan. You don't get a hat and t-shirt that says Pac-12 South 2023 or whatever. So I don't know. Yeah, it does diminish it a little bit, but you know, you're still getting a shot. If you do what you're supposed to do, you're going to play for a championship. So
yeah.
I think a lot more people would care more about that than sort of, you know, the title of division champs, even though it doesn't really matter that much.
I got my championship long sleeve shirt last night, Chris. We our co-ed fours beach volleyball league concluded. We had our semifinals and our finals, two tough matches, and we won. So we got our championship shirts.
Just to be clear, I wasn't poo-pooing championship shirts. I won some intramural championship shirts at Maryland, and they're prized possessions.
Yeah,
but I think it just means a little bit less in a sort of college setting with these, you know, high-end athletes.
Right. Yeah. They're
not
they're,
us, you know, who they can just hold
them
on
t-shirts.
To this.
They should give them t-shirts.
Okay, they can give them t-shirts.
But like, that's all we get is, you know, for like, well, we get like a gift card to the bar that we go to, and that's about it. But yeah. But no, that, yeah, I don't think you should get rings. T-shirts are something fine, but I don't know if you're like sporting, like if you get waxed in the championship game, you're sporting like Pac-12 South champs, baby. You know, like, you know, that fans, that really, and yeah, fans hated that because Clay Helton would talk about the championships when it was more about like winning the division. And this would sort of focus you into winning the conference. Like that's what, you know, a conference championship, not a division of the conference championship. So I think that would have maybe saved Clay Helton a little bit of grief because he wouldn't be saying the same things most likely.
The only thing it changes is when these athletes, these Pac-12 athletes are old men and they have their own children and they're telling stories of their athletic days. They can't say, you know, I won three Pac-12 North championships in my day. No, you can't say that. Can't say that.
Nope.
Can't say that. You can say you played for three Pac-12 titles, but you can't say you won a Pac-12 North championship or whatever.
All right. Anything else on that? We can move on.
No, I think we're good to move on. Like they're moving on from divisions.
Moving on. I'm going to put a graphic up here about the best coaches in college football. So CBS Sports, 247 Sports, they voted on this, and these are the best coaches. Chris, we wanted to test me on the podcast. But I wanted I had to put the graphic together, so I needed to.
And he didn't want to do a blindfolded, so I couldn't talk him into it. So he had to look at it. So we had him guess off air the top 10.
Right,
which I got pretty good.
I got 9 of the 10, I think.
You got pretty much all of them in their respective spots, except for like two. You had Ryan Day at number 5, and Jimbo is number 5. I don't think you like that having Jimbo above Ryan Day. And then you could say your embarrassing one of who you missed.
I totally missed Brian Kelly. So I was thinking of when I was going through my head, I was just thinking of the teams.
But you didn't even think of Notre Dame?
No, I mean it's Power Five, but like, and they didn't include what's it called? I don't think they have Cincinnati in here yet. So Luke Fickell wouldn't be in here. Like he would be top 10 otherwise. And it's sort of like so Dabo's won titles, but like they've fallen off. Like I don't know if I would have Dabo 3. And I don't know if I would Lincoln 4. Like, I think Ryan Day would be above Lincoln Riley for me.
Is he top 5, though?
I think Ryan Day would be top 5.
Like, no, Lincoln.
I mean, that's tough because he's been the head coach for 5 years. I mean, I guess around the same amount as Day. You know, he did win 4 of 5 conference titles. I mean, I think those guys are kind of similar to me. The question is, like, where does Dabo go? Because he's done more. He's won titles.
He's got a resume.
Yeah. But, like, where, like today, he's someone that's not adapting well to, you know, the transfer portal. He's, you know.
NIL.
And why Nick Saban's number one is no matter what's changed, you know, it feels like your town got hit by a hurricane, and it doesn't matter. He weathers every storm. He makes every change. He's like, we're defense and run game. It's like everyone's throwing the ball all over the place. All right, we'll do that. Okay, now we have a bunch of first round quarterbacks and wide receivers and stuff. Like completely changed how he's thought about offense. Completely changed with the way they're doing the transfer portal, how they recruit. Every time he loses, I mean. His assistant is number 2 on the list, you know? So, like, yeah, like, he's adapted to everything. And to keep that dynasty going with as much as the college football landscape's changed, I think that's why he's clear. Number one, the problem with Sweeney is, like, you know, it doesn't look like he's adapting. And I could see him falling off fairly quickly. So, and if I'm going forward, I think I would rather have Jimbo the way they recruited, you know, Ryan Day or Lincoln Riley almost ahead of Dabo at this point. Like if you're like start a team in 2022, but you got to have some resume component to this. So that's why he's 3 based on resume more than projection, I would say. What would you say?
Yeah, I see your point because the Clemson shine has fallen off a little bit, you know, when they were kind of beating on Alabama, win playoff games and, you know, the only team that could really take down Alabama. And yeah, that's sort of been diminished a little bit. But like you said, he's got rings though, Ryan. He's got a program going over there. They recruit really well. Recruiting has fallen off a little bit. But I also think it helps that he plays in sort of a non, like, murderer's row conference, like the ACC. So he's going to be able to put together, you know, double-digit win seasons more so than, you know, Kirby is going to have a much tougher time in the SEC, or Jimbo in the SEC and schools like that. So he does have the benefit of playing in a weaker conference, just like Lincoln is going to get the benefit of playing in a weaker conference like the Pac-12 moving forward.
Yeah. And the SEC was – they're stronger than it used to be. Like when they had Maryland, like they weren't very strong. But I think they got a lot stronger since getting rid of Maryland.
I heard what you said and it didn't register as quickly as it should have. I didn't jump on that. So I'll you got that one by me. I'll give that one by you.
So, you know, obviously USC plays – they used to play Brian Kelly. Now he's at LSU. Kyle Whittingham, I think he's, you know, deserves to be there. Harbaugh, just based on the, you know,
his last season,
and, like, you know, what he did at Stanford is crazy. Mike Gundy, I think I surprised you that I got him.
Yeah, you didn't even say his name. You said mullet.
I said, like,
mullet's got to be on there.
Yeah, mullet's on there. You know, Dave Aranda's only been the head coach for 3 years. He's moving up. Campbell, like, both those guys, you know, USC was pursued, kind of
so.
It's like Kurt Ferentz, it's like funny, and Paul Chryst, like Iowa, like he's just been around there forever. James Franklin being 15, I'm not sure about that. Stoops is sort of just like happy with his job. He never has to do anything more than go like 8-4. Never going to win anything, but he just, you know, they recruit pretty well and they keep moving forward. Dave Clawson at Wake Forest, that's kind of a weird one. I thought Kiffin would be higher than what he is.
I thought Kiffin should have been higher, at least top 15, I thought.
But Cristobal, that's still questionable. And then Mac Brown, you know, he's done some really good things at North Carolina.
Has a resume, an old resume, but he's got a resume.
But yeah, I mean, he's got a national title too. So like that certainly helps. But there's guys, like if you were starting a new, you know, if you're making a hire, like do you want to bring in Dave Aranda or do you want to bring in Dabo Swinney? You know, there's questions that you would want to bring in there. But anyway. And that was interesting.
I just want to say this is the fifth consecutive time for this list that Lincoln has been in the top 10.
Okay.
And the only time he was outside of the top 10 was when he debuted in 2018 at number 15. So been top 20 his whole life. He knows is the top 20.
And for those of you out there that love to just pile on and say, where's Clay Helton?
Well,
he's not a power five anymore. So he's not eligible to make the list.
A lot of Clay Helton on the show. I don't think a lot of people are going to like this show.
Not too much. I don't know. We a little bit. Okay, so we want to talk about a couple of transfers in. We're going to talk about scholarships overall and stuff too, because some of that stuff is changing. But first one, and I got to talk with him a little bit. So he officially visited, what is it now, 2 weekends ago.
Did you say his name?
Cooper Lovelace.
I didn't hear you say
it. I didn't know. I did say it. I was like trying to like build up. Cooper Lovelace took an official visit. This is a picture of him on that official visit down at the beach, having a good time. You know, like just enjoying.
Kansas boy
out here.
Just enjoying the SoCal life.
So somehow, like I get connected through a reporter that I had known for a while, and he had been working with Cooper, and I guess Cooper liked this, you know, my friend that's a reporter, and my reporter kind of recommended me. And so Cooper was like, boom, on it. And so we were talking quite a bit. His story is great as far as like, you know, Chris, you posted his official visit, the video of him like doing the splits and like standing on. No, so he's 6'5", 320 pounds, yeah. Grabbing his leg and putting up like next to his ear like a ballerina. And you're like, what? He didn't start playing football until his senior year at high school. So he's like, yeah, imagine getting recruited like in December of your senior year of high school. Like it's not going to happen.
With no tape.
Yeah, no tape, nothing going on. You know, does a good job at Butler Community College in Kansas. You know, he's getting his second associate degree, and he was taking, it was funny. We were talking, I think we were texting at like one, I don't even know if I told you this, Chris, like 1 a.m, we're like texting and he's like, okay, I gotta go to bed. I got a finals in the morning. I was like, what?
He told me something similar. He was like, I got to go to bed. We were texting at like, we were DMing at like 1 a.m. when I was asking about his offer. And he was like, okay, I'm having a good time with this conversation, but it's 1 a.m. I got school tomorrow. Florida coaches are coming by to watch me. I got to go to bed.
Yeah. And it's just nuts. His phone, he had hundreds of messages. So like he gets into the portal and it's a big deal. And, you know, we've talked about this before. There just wasn't as many high profile, like surefire starting kind of Power Five players that you thought were being in the portal. Coaches, I think, are doing a much better job of recruiting their own players. So there wasn't that, the list of like star offensive tackles was not very long. He looked like he had the potential to be one of those. He looked like he had the potential to be a star. And so his phone was blowing up. So I almost felt guilty. So he was like, all these coaches, he's like, and he wasn't trying to be like conceited. He was just like, these are head coaches and offensive coordinators just calling me, you know, texting me. And I almost felt weird, like talking to him. Like I'm at dinner with my mom is visiting and they're like, I set this up. I'm like, okay. And so it was really nice. He gave me a really long interview. I think we talked for like 25 minutes. So many good things. I gave some quotes to Chris for your story. I put up a VIP story over at uscfootball.com. Make sure you check it out. If you're not a subscriber, you can subscribe for a month for a dollar. So go over there and do that. We put some quotes in the war room too. I mean, just said so much. And Nasty wants to, you know, he's like, he comes on his official visit and, you know, there's normally all the pomp and circumstance stuff. And he's like, I just want to do football. Like, whatever you guys want me to do, we can do it. But like, don't do anything extra for me. I want to sit here and watch film and talk football and whiteboard things. And the fans, everyone loved it on the site, Chris. Like, they loved the story. He just seems like a kid that you're just going to want to root for. He was really excited to come to Los Angeles. And, you know, he had committed and then, you know, took the last final and basically had to like pack up his stuff and move to Los Angeles. And then I think they're starting classes. Were
Wednesday,
starting
today.
Today, I believe the 18th. So he was like, yeah, I got to get to LA and move in and start classes, start your summer classes and stuff. So it's, you know, for not seeing a lot of great offensive line, you know, talent in the portal. He seemed like someone that could be a diamond in the rough with a lot of upside that maybe, you know, wasn't a highly ranked kid out of high school because he didn't start playing until his senior year. But I think USC's got a good one in Cooper Lovelace.
Yeah, that's a win. And me and Gerard are going to break him down a little bit more in our Composite 2-Star Recruit podcast. So check that out when we break down all the recruits that committed to USC. But yeah, I think Cooper's a big win for reasons that you said. You know, there wasn't a lot of sort of top end offensive line talent that entered the portal that, you know, could be come in right away and compete for a day one starting job. And, you know, that's a little bit of a blowback, especially when USC did not, you know, wasn't able to get a 5-star guy like Josh Connerly, you know, lost out to Oregon. So it became vital to get someone in that could help out with the depth. And I think Cooper does that in a big way. Especially as a guy who can play tackle if you need him at 6'5", 320, but could also be an interior offensive lineman, which seemed to be what he mainly played at Butler. Obviously, you worry about maybe the competition level at the JUCO level, you know, making the jump to Power 5, Pac-12 or whatever. I think it's going to take a little bit of time, but he's absolutely a guy, I think, because he does have experience. Let's get that straight. He does have experience at a college level. That's more so than a guy that USC has on the two deep right now in terms of the backups, you know, especially with the, you know, Gino Quinones at that guard spot, Maximus Gibbs at the guard spot playing offensive line. He could come in right away and be one of the backups to the guards, which I've mentioned several times on this podcast, which I've written about ad nauseum, is that they need more interior line depth. And Cooper fills that hole immensely. And again, he could play tackle if something needs to be. But I think right now his starting spot where he's going to start out is the interior. And, you know, he's a guy who's probably going to take a little bit of time to get up to speed, but he's raw. But man, he just wants to learn. All he wants to do is talk football. All he wants to do is get better. You had that great picture you posted in your story about him and Josh Henson working on offensive line technique where they're at brunch on the beach. I assume like waiting for their table or something. I don't know. But it's a great picture. And that just shows the drive for him to be better. So I'm not worried about him in terms of like what his development's going to be. I think he's going to be a good player at USC. I think, you know, 2023 is going to be his shot to be a starter in this lineup. And you never know. Injuries happen in this game. Injuries happen on offensive line. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, he needed to step in at some point during the season and he filled in well. So you're hoping he gets on that two deep, get some time and some blowouts, get some of those reps. I believe he has 3 years of eligibility, so you have a lot of time to mold this guy. And I just think it's a good pickup. It's going to be a depth piece, but obviously a guy who can be a starter in the future.
Yeah, he says he has 3 years to play three, and he kind of got offended when he saw some people getting offers, and he's like, hey, man, like, and he felt like that he was like this diamond where, like, he's got, you know, a couple years experience playing in college, plus he has 3 years of eligibility left, and he's
athletic.
And, and like you said, he can play inside, he can play outside, he's, like, fast enough to play tackle, but he's big enough to play guard. And, you know, the Josh Henson, this isn't the picture. I'm sorry, I didn't add it to the system. So if you're watching on YouTube, I don't have the other picture, but you can check it out in the story. But the other picture with Josh Henson is like Chris said, at brunch, he's like, yeah, we wanted to work on some technique stuff. So they're like literally in a restaurant and, you know, he's bending over like, you know, and showing like hand placement and stuff. So all he wants to do is talk about football. He just wants to win. And that's it. And the fans it was just kind of a breath of fresh air because they wanted, oh, we're going to talk about Jordan Addison in a minute, but like, oh, you know, can he play on the offensive line? Well, here's an offensive lineman. And all he's nasty. He just wants to get in there and mix it up. And I think you guys will like the stories if you haven't seen them yet over on USCFootball.com.
And he can do splits, Ryan. How many offensive linemen can do splits? He can, you know, pull that.
Yeah, that's good. You're doing the visual.
I'm pretty flexible. We were talking about it because I saw that video on Twitter like 3 months ago or something like that. And I was just going through his page and I saw that video. I was like, that's him? That's the kid? So I sent him that. I was like, that's you? I didn't know that was you. I'm going to recreate this.
Yeah.
I didn't intend to recreate it when he committed. I didn't say that, but that ended up being what it was. So
I didn't download the video for the YouTube show either, but Chris gave a little, a nice visual presentation. I mean, you can look on his Twitter page and see that and stuff. And it's funny, he had mentioned to me like, and again, I think he said some funny things that weren't like conceited at all, but he was just sort of like, that's a hard one not to watch more than like just once, right? I'm like, you're right. Like, you have to like, I have to watch that again. Like, as soon as you see it, like, I gotta watch that again because that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Like, some of the, what was the, Alabama like offensive tackle that was doing all these crazy things?
Evan Neal.
Evan Neal.
Yeah.
You just kind of have to watch it like, how is a guy that big doing stuff?
He's like 320 or something, but looks like 250 or something. It's ridiculous.
But Cooper, you know, Lovelace, a great one there. Another pickup from the transfer portal, more recent, but also he took the same official visit the same weekend that Lovelace did, Washington cornerback Jacoby Covington. So I've got a picture of up here up on the YouTube page. We got him in a throne too, Chris. What do USC fans need to know about Covington?
Yeah, another sort of good pickup for this defense. As you can see, USC has been hitting defense since spring camp ended. We saw in spring camp how thin that quarterback room was pretty that looked at the end of the season. You know, they do have a little bit of help coming. You know, Damani should be a lot healthier in the summer. Josh Jackson should be a lot healthier. They got Fabian Ross coming in, the other 4-star freshman signee. But they still need a little bit more depth. Jacoby Covington, you know, 6'1" guy coming out who can probably play safety. I feel like he's going to be a cornerback. That's where they kind of need him the most. You know, they got Zion Branch coming. You know, you got more safety depth coming in that regard. So he's just a guy who's going to be able to come in, probably compete for that other starting job outside of Mekhi Blackmon, assuming he's healthy with a foot. I think it's a good pickup. Just it bolsters the depth, pushes some guys down, more competition there. You know, he doesn't have a ton of experience. Most of it was on special teams. I think he had like 5 tackles and a sack last year. Doesn't have any starts. So he is young. So he's not really bringing a lot of, obviously there's not a lot of experience there, but he is an older guy. You know, he's been in a college program before. He knows what to do, knows how to handle himself, knows how to carry himself. So it's just another like sort of older guy, if you will, in the program. Just to make it a little bit more experience in that room. Just another voice. You know, to go with Blackmon as a guy who's gone through the college ranks before. But again, not a lot of playing time, but I feel like he is a guy who could at least compete for the starting job and, you know, possibly be a backup if need be.
I think he's technically like a redshirt freshman, but mm-hmm. he came in there, what, 2020?
He didn't play in 2020.
Yeah. Played like 4 games.
He got limited time in 2020. Played in,
like, I think 4 games in 21.
I think he played in all the games in 2021, but mostly special teams. So does have some experience, but you know, he's not a guy who has like 6 starts to his name or anything like that. So he fits in that room in terms of being a talented guy, who's a former four-star prospect, but not a lot of experience. So it's going to be working in there, but again, like a guy who can come in and compete for that starting job opposite of Blackman.
Okay. I need to check on that on our scholarship chart, because I think he played defensively in four games, but if he played in every game of special teams, then he'd be a true sophomore and not a redshirt freshman. So I need to check on that for him. But if you remember, Washington had a really, really good secondary, best in the Pac-12 probably, and then, you know, one of the best in the country. So for Covington, it wasn't like, okay, well, he wasn't that good. He seemed to be like an heir apparent, like he was going to be moving in and playing a lot more, a much bigger role this season. Now he comes over to USC. You know, definitely he's got some game experience. He's a more experienced college player that, you know, pretty highly ranked. Seems like he's coming into his own and will definitely add some depth where USC was very thin, like Chris mentioned, in the spring. All right. Did you look him up or something, or did he play, or do you know? I think Washington got rid of him but he had defensive stats, I think, in four games, if I'm not mistaken. So we'll double check on that to make sure. So he's either going to be.
Yeah, don't quote me on him playing in every game last season.
It's recorded, so it's not only quoted, but you actually are on tape.
No one's gonna listen to this in 3 years. The time will pass.
Okay.
The time will pass.
But he's couple years in college football, and it's definitely weird, you know.
Yeah, 12 games in 2021.
Oh, he did. Okay, so I'll update.
So I'm not crazy. So quote me. Quote me.
Yeah,
I was right.
So he will be a true sophomore then. He will not be a redshirt freshman. So I'll fix that on the scholarship chart.
There you go.
Good. Hey, you know, we're doing a little.
I won this round.
We're doing a little. No, we're working it out, which is good. Chris said so. The focus on the defense makes sense because USC's offense is probably going to be pretty good in 2022. Where were the concerns? The concerns, if you're going to say, hey, why does USC not win the division? No, it doesn't matter the division anymore. Why is USC not going to be in the title game? Probably going to be because of deficiency on the defensive side of the ball. So it looks like they're addressing that in the portal. But if you can go out and get a major college football award winner, you know, position that you're pretty deep at receiver. I think they feel pretty good of where they are. Already brought in three transfers. If you can get a guy like Jordan Addison, I think you want to get him. And so it seemed like the talk was, you know, he was on USC's camp. He was at USC this past weekend taking an official visit. He put in an Instagram story, Chris, he took a picture from like Lincoln Riley's like pool, like overlooking the ocean and stuff. Like, so, you know, so that's pretty cool.
Not a bad recruiting tool.
No, it's pretty amazing. He was in Texas. There was a lot of people in Texas that felt pretty confident, about his visit there. I think Alabama's been a player, but sort of like one of those ones where like, yeah, they put a lot of dudes in the NFL. Do they need another receiver? You know, they did lose some guys. That one didn't seem, it seems like it would make sense. Like if I'm like advising Jordan Addison, you know, and he's like, "Hey, I'm thinking about Alabama." I'd be like, "Yeah, that sounds great." Like,
Heisman guy coming. Get the Heisman,
like, duh. You know, it makes sense. Texas, I'm guessing like they could probably put together some huge NIL package and stuff. Like, I think that's going to be a big part of what they're doing. Which USC, the NIL stuff would be more of being a star, a college star, and he's already won an award, so. I think the LA thing for that might help more than like a collective, which USC doesn't really have going yet. But if you want to talk about lifestyle, USC is going to win that one going away. Even though Austin's great, you know, there's no comparison to Tuscaloosa and LA, depending on what kind of, you know, some people would rather be in the country, which is fine. But I a guy like Addison playing at Pittsburgh seems to make sense for the LA stuff. My guess is it's going to come down to USC and Texas. I think there were Texas people that thought he was like going to go there for sure. My gut's always said he was going to end up at USC, sort of like we debated the Caleb Williams thing for a long time, and he ended up where you thought he was going to be. I'm kind of in the same boat on this one, Chris. I think Jordan Addison's going to end up at USC. Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, that's still my feeling. And, you know, we've seen all the reports that have kind of trickled out over the last 24 hours that it's down to USC and Texas. And I feel like if we're looking at that on paper, I feel like USC has a much better chance against Texas than it does against Alabama. I don't know if you feel similar in that regard. That's why I still feel pretty good about USC. Obviously,
It's the transfer portal. It's the age of NIL. A lot of things could happen. But as we mentioned, USC has a ton of things working for it in their favor. Obviously, Caleb Williams, he has a relationship with them. The DMV pipeline is going strong. You can't beat LA. I've talked about this on the two-star composite with Gerard. The DMV kids, the kids from Maryland, the kids from that area, they love LA. Is there something about it that, you know, draws them in? I think that is sort of a draw for them. And obviously, you got a high-powered offense in Lincoln Riley. You got a bunch of receivers. You're going to put up points in this Pac-12. And if you kind of look at – it's interesting. If you look at USC and Texas – so, Ryan, just pretend we're putting them up on a board.
Okay.
And
board.
They look very similar compared to, you know, last year in terms of Texas sucked, 5-7. USC really sucked, 4-8. Both get high-profile QBs, the top two QBs in the portal, Quinn Ewers for Texas, Caleb Williams for USC. Both got nightlife or city life. Austin, Texas, great city. Los Angeles, great city. Both lots of NIL opportunities. Texas, money out the ass.
Yeah.
USC, also money out the ass. Sort of these two new head coaches. You know, Lincoln Riley, obviously Stark isn't his first year, but he's, you know, a proven guy on offense. Lincoln Riley, proven guy on offense. So I feel like they match up in a lot of different ways. And I look at it, and I'm just still picking USC in that regard when I look at it, just because of the Caleb Williams connection and things like that. And USC seemed to be the landing spot from the jump, you know, when Pete Thamel and Bruce Feldman were all initially tweeting about it when the first news sort of hit about it. So, you know, USC versus Alabama, that one's a little trickier. But USC versus Texas, I feel like I like USC a little bit more in that head to head.
I like it too, and I think with Sark, I mean, if Sark was starting year one at Texas the same way that Lincoln Riley's starting, and was able to remake the roster with the new transfer portal rules and the way they've been able to do collectives like NIL stuff with the paying every offensive lineman, all that stuff is going on, I think that would have helped. The problem that, you know, Sark did have a year and they blew a lot of games and they looked terrible. Like, he's already like making the program. Now, you know, I think the rebuild is going to take a little bit longer. Lincoln Riley's doing some of the quick rebuild, using all the advantages of the different rules. And we're going to talk about some other, you know, rules with the scholarships and stuff here in a minute. And there's a lot of momentum for Lincoln Riley. And you just feel like, you know, Sark had success, but he was like Nick Saban's offensive coordinator when guys were, you know, winning awards and you're winning national championships. Like, this was Lincoln Riley's offense he wasn't part of, you know, someone else's program. He was running it.
Yeah.
And went to the playoff three times and won the conference four times in a row and had, you know, has three quarterbacks that are starters in the NFL right now and two Heisman winners and all that stuff. And that's attributed to Lincoln Riley, not because you were an assistant. You know, it took Kirby Smart years to kind of get out of Nick Saban's shadow, right? Even lost to him during the season and then beats him in the playoffs and win the championship. So I think you have two, like, this could be a big turnaround year for Sark for sure, but there's more momentum on the USC side just because it's all brand new. And Sark already had his brand new year, and it mm-hmm. They blew a 28-7.
It was ugly.
It was ugly. There was, you know, they lost to Kansas, you know, like, you know, if next year, if like Lincoln Riley loses to Oregon State
or Arizona,
or oh my God, Arizona. Yeah, that's a better example. Arizona. Although Arizona has like competency.
Momentum,
like,
at least.
Like, I don't know what's going on with Kansas, but like, you losing to Kansas, like, that's pretty
Arizona
bad.
State is probably the safer.
I mean, USC lost to Stanford last year, who was 3-8. Like, they were terrible. They were butt, like I'd like to say. I've said it many
Stanford
times.
Stanford butt.
They were very butt. And people got on me. And then they're 3-9. Sorry, not 3-8. 3-9.
You double down on that.
That's
for you.
I doubled down when they beat Oregon and USC. And I was still correct. So, meh. I'm just kidding. But anyway, yes. So that would be like that thing. So Lincoln Riley hasn't had those losses to Kansas or blowing 21 points. He was on the other side of that. I mean, he beat Sark head-to-head in that one, right? So, you didn't even think about that one, that he had already, you know, he played Sark last year and, you know, puts in Caleb Williams and boom, they come back and win. That was crazy. And they, you know, Kansas played Oklahoma tough too, but Caleb Williams had that one play where he handed the ball off or whatever, and the running back gets stuffed, and Caleb Williams takes the ball away from the running back and then runs in for a touchdown. I think it was for a touchdown. It was first down or touchdown. And you're like, the announcers are like, I've never seen that before. I've never seen anyone do that before. So,
just football.
A lot of ties. A lot of ties. Like the Lincoln Riley, Stark, Jordan Addison ties.
It's interesting on paper when you just line them up.
It is. All right. So that was cool. Well, let's talk about, some scholarship numbers and stuff. So I've updated the scholarship chart. There haven't been any new departures. We talked about Elijah Winston, I think, the last time we were on the show. You know, since spring ended, you had Bryson Shaw from Ohio State, Eric Gentry from Arizona State, Solomon Bird from Wyoming, Cooper Lovelace from Butler, and then Jacoby Covington from Washington. So those are the new guys that were in the portal. My count has 80. I did remove Micah Kroom from the scholarship chart. He was the, I think, like seventh year senior safety, Chris. But I got word from a source that he's moved over to financial aid. So he's going to still be on scholarship. I don't think he's going to be able to play anymore, though. So I'm assuming he's not going to be on the roster going forward. That'll be something we should watch for. But the other two guys, Jake Smith and Dorian Hewitt, wide receiver Jake Smith and cornerback Dorian Hewitt, both of those guys are no longer on the roster. They weren't on the roster in the spring. And then what we've learned, our understanding is that, and I think Stuart Mandel from The Athletic originally came out to USC. We talked to him when he was at practice, spring camp. He has a sit down with Lincoln Riley and some of the staff, and they reveal that compliance brought this rule. And I think The Athletic did another story recently where they brought it up again. Basically, when a new head coach takes over, you can cut guys, and basically said, oh, I don't want him on my roster anymore. I know we said we would give him a 4-year scholarship. So what you can do is say, you get to keep your scholarship, but you're no longer on. So if you want to stay at USC and get your degree, you will still be on financial aid. You still get all the benefits you would as a USC football player. You're just not on the roster anymore, so you're not going to play. And I think in Antonio's story or The Athletic story, they mentioned like 10 guys for doing this. I've counted 3. I mentioned, Hewitt, Smith. And then Micah Kroom looks like, but he was a former walk-on. I think going back to walk-on status, I think that could work. But the fact that he's on aid, it's probably, my guess is he's sort of like a late cut. And he's going to stay on aid and then not be, on the roster anymore. I bet that's all, that's kind of my guess of what's going on here. I don't see, I didn't see anyone else that would have fit that. Basically, someone that was on the roster that had eligibility left, that didn't go in the portal and wasn't on the roster anymore. We found 2. The article mentioned like up to 10. I don't think that's the case, but there could be some guys that were playing in the spring and then they're removed from the roster going in the fall. And if they don't go in the portal, potentially they have 1 year left and they want to finish their USC degree. They stay on the scholarship. And then if they have eligibility left, they could transfer somewhere else after that, after they get their degree. This is a lot of speculation of stuff that's going on, trying to figure out what these numbers are. With Kroom off there, USC still could have added 10 players from, after the spring ball and kind of still fit in that 85 limit. Sorry, that was a whole mouthful there, Chris. Get your thoughts on it. We got to talk about another rule change with the NCAA too, but thoughts on that with the being able to cut guys and where USC stands on scholarships.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting loophole, and I don't know if it's a loophole, but an interesting rule that, based on what Lincoln Riley has been doing at USC, it's just like we were talking about earlier with the division scrapping just aligns perfectly for what USC is trying to do in 2022. This rule aligns perfectly with what Lincoln Riley needs to do at USC, which is overturn that roster. Gives them just a little bit more wiggle room to say, hey, these guys aren't really the guys I need to win this season. So, but it's also a way that we can, still get them that education that they signed up for when they committed to USC football. But also, it's sort of like a win-win, if you will. You're still able to try to get that USC degree, get that world-class USC education, and then Lincoln Riley gets that spot that he can use for, you know, another player that he wants to bring in. It is interesting. It's something that obviously he's going to use to the fullest of advantages. And I'm just glad that you didn't put me on aid when we merged and you took over, you know, Fight On 24/7 Sports, and we kind of came together. I'm just glad that you didn't put me on aid, Ryan. That's all I'm thankful for.
You weren't cut.
I weren't cut. I don't know what even aid looks like in this metaphor, but I'm just glad that you kept me around.
Yeah. No, I mean, you've been a integral part.
All right, that wasn't me fishing. I was just making a joke. You don't have to go into a spiel right now.
I don't have to compliment you.
No, you don't have to. You can insult me. Don't compliment.
No, that's fine. No, I'd rather compliment you. Just the fact that you're here right now, doing a video show, doing a podcast, doing two podcasts in a day. Could you, if I would ask you like a year ago or 2 years ago, like, Chris, you're going to be doing two podcasts in a day, probably like 4 hours of talking total. One of them shot on video. You'll be doing live videos. You would have probably crawled into a hole and looked at the back.
I would have crawled into this mini fridge over here and told you to kick me off the second story. Just like,
you would have looked at your the back of your calf and just go, man, that looks like a spot.
Man, what happened?
I could get a 10K tattoo.
What happened? Things have gone off the rails.
But the other change, and it doesn't really impact USC this year, but you know, whatever, going forward.
Is it a breaking news thing?
Sure, why not? We can do it. So the NCAA, according, was it Bruce Feldman that tweeted this?
Yeah.
I think you saw this going in. So for the next 2 years, there's two limits when it comes to recruiting and scholarships and players on your team. There's the 85 limit, which is your total number of scholarships, which we were just talking about, that USC could make some cuts to add some more. But there's also the limit of 25 per year, which became problematic when the transfer portal era became a thing, right? So the transfer portal era means you could lose a whole bunch of players and you can't replace them, because if you sign 21 kids out of high school and then there's a transfer portal, like say you lose 15 kids to the transfer portal, they don't say, oh, you can get those 15 back. Now this year, the NCAA allowed you could replace 7 players. And plus, you know, you can always use players from the year before if you didn't sign enough players. So for class of 2023, USC didn't sign that many high school players. They can bring a bunch in. But those are the initial counters, that 25 limit. And that was a real problem, especially with the kind of free agency that's going on now. So that becomes like kind of an antiquated number, I would say, the 25. And so now, at least for the next 2 years, there's not going to be a 25. It's just basically you can sign a whole bunch of guys and keep them as long as you keep your limit.
Under that 85.
Under the 85. And I think we saw this in the SEC where like Alabama and like teams would sign like 36 guys and then just to see. And then once they get them in, they're like, ah, we really want 28. And they cut a bunch of them, you know? And so they wanted to use this to prohibit the oversigning stuff. But now with the transfer portal, you need to be able to sign more guys. You can't lose a whole bunch and then say, you're not going to replace them, you know? And we saw this with USC and the sanctions. The 15 limit was more, I guess it was more of a handcuff than the 75 limit, because that was 15. You know, you could stay at 75. USC's, when they had the sanctions, they were cut down to 85 to 75 scholarships total, which sucked. But then the only being able to sign 15 really kind of limited what you could do. So they started blue shirting where you could count ahead. That was a really limiting factor where, you know, 85 to 75, what are you talking about? Is it 15% less or something like that? I don't know what the percentages are, but something. But from 25 to 15, that's a huge percentage, like what, 40% or something, 35%. That's a lot. You're cutting a lot of what you could sign every year, and that's, you know, multiple years. So I think this is a smart move. You can't, the 25 limit, because you could lose guys from the transfer portal. You could say to me, like, Arizona State's losing, you know, 30 guys or something to the transfer portal, but you can't replace that many. Like, that doesn't make much sense.
Are you saying I could theoretically, as a head coach at a whatever program, I could sign 85 players?
I did not read what I'm assuming I just saw the tweet, or you saw the tweet and we were talking about it, but yeah, like, so if you're
going to start,
if you're going to start a new program, so like there's an expansion team or something, you know,
Chris Trevino State.
You guys are the Sycamores, right? I assume that's what your name would be. I don't know. We'll make it up. It'd be that'd be something Marylandy, right? Or like
the Crabs.
The Crabs. Your first recruiting class to
Fighting Crabs.
85 guys to the Fighting Crabs. Fighting Sycamore Crabs. Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful, historic program, and we will win a national championship within the next 5 years. Shotgun actually pointed this out, that this rule or this rule change not only lets you sign more people, but it also mean that coaches will cut a lot more people moving forward. So we're going to see a lot more cutting, a lot more signing.
There's unintended consequences, right? Like you can't hurt coaches by saying you're not allowed to sign more than 25 guys when you're losing that many in a transfer portal year. But there's also going to be it's going to hurt some kids that get like, oh, they're going to sign and they basically get pushed out. And you're like, yeah, you're not going to play. Now, unless it's a new coach, you can't like legally cut them. They're going to be on a 4-year scholarship, but you don't have to play them. You could, you have a meeting and like, hey, you're not going to be playing. You should, entertain the portal. And we've seen some guys just go into the portal and never be heard from again. So unintended consequences is sort of, there's going to be some bad things that happen too, but you had to do something because the way guys are leaving from the portal, I do think it's going to make, and I think we even saw it this year, one of the things that you adapt quickly is recruit the hell out of your own roster, right? You have to make sure. I thought USC was going to lose more dudes after the spring. Guys would transfer out. We saw Elijah Winston, and that was it. Now, USC might lose some guys from the roster, but if it does, it's going to be because Lincoln Riley wanted them to go, to retire essentially or go on aid instead of being on the roster. I think it's a pretty good sign that no one like voluntarily left. I think you sort of got guys out, most of the guys that they had cut or got, that left, they weren't going to be contributors or just the culture wasn't going to be what they wanted. It's good, you made the changes, but it seems like the people that were at spring ball, Chris, had bought it. And there were some guys that were sort of on the fence. I think we've all reached out to some of them, and to their credit, like everyone seemed like they were fired up and ready to go. Like guys are like, he's probably not going to be around, right? And you talk to them, they're like, nope, they're in, And so I think that's a good sign that those players wanted to stay. The curious thing will be the next time we see a roster, like going into fall camp.
Who's not on that list?
And most likely it's not going to be because they wanted to leave. It was because like Lincoln Riley, they made a call. And some of it might be if they can get a stud at that position out of the portal, then maybe they want to go with him instead of the guy that's currently on the roster. I don't know. I mean, it's a little cutthroat, Chris, but you're trying to – there's a lot of pressure on Lincoln Riley to win games right away. He seems to be doing everything possible to reshape this roster that he calls the most unique in college football history to make it so it can be a winning roster.
Yeah, I mean, that's the nature of the business these days with the portal and NIL. And if you're a college coach and you're running a program and you're sitting these kids down and you're telling them, hey, there's not a lot of opportunity here. I suggest you maybe go in the portal, seek greener pastures. Send them to my university, the Sycamore Fighting Crabs. We need bodies. Send them my way. I'm looking for winners. I'm looking for short and stocky safeties. I'm looking for ball getters. I'm looking for it all. So, yeah, I mean, in a more serious note, yeah, I mean, that's the nature of the game. Everything's changing. You're going to see a lot of going and coming, in the next couple of years. So,
all right. So, for the Fighting Sycamore Crabs, are we talking
Sycamore like, Fighting, or is it Fighting Sycamore Crabs, or is it Sycamore Fighting Crabs?
I'm not sure.
Fighting Sycamore Crabs.
Yeah.
Because what is a sycamore crab in this bit?
I'm not sure. Okay. I would say, how are you going to build out the support staff? We saw like our own Barton Simmons get hired on by Vanderbilt. Like, who would you pluck away? Like,
oh, I'm plucking Gerard.
So you went Gerard?
I'm taking Gerard. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You're going to have to pay up. I don't know what my budget is at Chris Trevino University, but I'm spending a good mint on Gerard. I'm making him just like my head of like player personnel scouting. I don't know how he is in terms of a people person. I don't think he's going to be like shaking hands and everything, but I just need him to be like, you should go after this person. This kid is no good. This kid is underrated.
Would you try to hire Keeley away?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. I think so. I just want to get the whole gang back together. Nice. I think I could hire Shotgun, get him to move back. Well, I guess Christopher University isn't really based in Southern California. I mean, it has to be. If we're the Fighting Sycamore Crabs, we have to be in Maryland.
Oh, I don't think you're going to get Gerard there.
Shotgun's already there.
Yeah, Shotgun.
So I can get
it.
Him on. I got to hire Shotgun. He could be team photographer / analytics, whatever. He'll chart everything. You know, that I think that's just the way to go.
So 247 recruiting analysts, like, are you going to try to get like Brian Doan, who's out there in that area? Would you go after like Huffman or Biggins or Blair? Or
I don't think I could get any of the West Coast guys.
Yeah.
I think Steve Wilfong, I could maybe really? Try to.
He's like a super national guy. Or
he's
something,
like right? in the middle, you know, and sort of that. Okay. I can make him. I only have to. The West Coast guy, I got to make him go all the
Dude,
way over.
Doan already covers the DMV.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
he'll get a call from me.
You don't like Doan?
He'll get a call from me. I've never met Doan.
Oh, you
I've
never
met
Doan?
Yeah. Have you met Doan?
Of course.
Yeah, you probably have like 30 stories about Doan. I don't know, like, many.
He used to be an LA Times guy. He was a West
oh, really?
Coast guy.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that. So I've DM'd him a couple times, stalked him like that, but never met him in person.
Can't believe you're dissing my man Doan.
I haven't dissed anybody.
I'll talk him down.
Maybe at the next publisher's meeting.
He might be upset about this.
Maybe the next publisher. Was he at the publisher meeting we went to like 4 years ago?
I think he probably was. I think he was at a scout one. I think he was a scout. Yeah.
I have no idea what you could point to anybody and I'd be like, oh, is that Brian Doan? I have no idea what he looks like.
Yeah.
No idea. Not a clue.
Kind of tallish white guy. Yeah, I think he covered UCLA.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that'll track at the publisher's meeting. It's like every guy at the publisher's meeting, Ryan.
Not really. All right. Well, no more about Chris Trevino University. Listen until later on.
Fighting Sycamore Crabs.
Fighting Sycamore Crabs. Okay, why don't we take a quick break and we're going to come back and we'll
Sweet.
Answer some questions back in a minute.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, we're back here on the Peristyle Podcast and Tunnel Vision on our YouTube channel. I put up the wrong graphic. I put Tunnel Vision will begin soon instead of we will return shortly. I was trying to do the graphics while we're on break. Not really much of a break when you're on the YouTube channel, but we have a commercial plays on the podcast. All right, Chris, we have a voicemail.
Okay.
Should we start with that?
Yeah. We always do that. Let's do it.
All right. Let's do a voicemail.
Hi. Hi. This question is for, Ryan and Chris. The question is, should we just list Solo as the starting nose guard, edge rusher, defensive tackle, linebacker, outside linebacker, free safety, strong safety, corner? Because my real question is, if we just line up Solo versus Pac-12 offenses, can we keep them under 14 points with just him? Eddie from Orange.
Eddie. Whoa. I was going to put up the Solo graphic, but Chris was doing a good visual on our YouTube page, you know, putting counting number of players.
I was just listing.
So I had to wait. Yeah, he was just listing. So I had to wait to put up the picture.
What a beautiful question. Eddie?
Solomon Tule Alapupu is Solo.
But there's two solos now.
I know
what he's talking about. But there's two solos now, yes, technically.
But he's talking about Solomon Tule Alapupu.
What a beautiful question. And I guess I want to take this question literal. And if I just clone Solo and put him at every position on the field, can I hold a defense or an offense to 14 points? I don't think so. Here's why. Because while I love Solo, he cannot play safety. He cannot play cornerback. But the front, I think the front would be okay. You know, I got two solos in the middle, a linebacker. I got a solo off the edge. I got a solo DN. I got a solo D tackle. I got a solo nose tackle. That might be where my issue is on the front. But I think the front would be okay. But you got to get to the quarterback quick to prevent those passes to my solo secondary, which I don't think will be highly rated in the PFF. I don't think it's going to do well. 14 points, no. I think you could beat one team, though. I think you could beat Arizona State with just the all-solo defense. But what a great question, because Solo is sort of turned into like this funny meme on the P. There's this photo. You can probably find it on Twitter somewhere. But it's like they started summer workouts, and it's like some of the linebackers on the little intramural field.
Yeah.
And they're all in black, and like someone just cropped it for Solo, and he looks big. So now the joke is he can play any position on the field.
Yeah.
It's a great meme. I love it. It pops up all the time on the
people P. put it in their signatures or whatever on the peristyle. You see it a bunch.
It's like, why do we need this lineman? We have Solo. And they'll just post that photo. We don't need a defensive tackle. We have Solo. So great meme, great question. And that's my run at answering that in a serious manner.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Just when he first came in, I think he'd have a better shot of being a back seven guy. Now that he's bigger, he can control. I think you could put him anywhere in the front seven, but I think in the secondary it would be tougher. The one USC player, like if you had to think about a college football player that you know that you could put in every position
and win
and like give yourself the best chance of winning. The one guy, I think we had talked about this, and he's been a guest on the show. Taylor Mays was the one, because he was the big safe. So he could play. I mean, he was fast enough to play corner. Obviously, he played safety. But he was big enough that he could be in any of those linebacker spots for sure. The question would be like, you know, you're not going to have like a defensive tackle that's 230 or whatever. But he was like the fact that he was still like 230 and could run and could be a corner because he could run. Then you're sort of like, okay, well, could you fit him in and, you know, just have like smaller guys along the front? I mean, okay, he's not big, but he's still running a 4.3 or 4.2 something at your offensive lineman. So you don't see that a lot. So I think he was the one dude that I could think of that you could like make a whole defense out of and still probably be okay if you cloned 11 Taylor Mazes. Anyone, if I'm anywhere in college football or any, I don't know, NFL or where, that you think could work?
I'm just sort of, I'm looking at it strictly as a USC standpoint, but if I'm taking the question and altering it a little bit, what if you could take one player, but you can get them in terms of different body types over their careers?
Okay.
So like my example here is like Drake Jackson. Like if I could take freshman year Drake Jackson when he was like 270, 265.
Okay.
Those are all my lines. I could take super skinny Drake Jackson and I can make him my secondary. And I could take middle of the road, like 250 Drake Jackson. I can make them those linebackers. I think if I'm doing it that way, that's my best argument. If I could take Drake Jackson, who literally played at like three different sizes during his time at USC, that's my logical way of getting around your question.
I like that. I thought he got down to 250. That was the skinny version. Was he smaller?
I thought
he was
a little bit smaller than that.
Okay. It's still like, you know, if it's a 240-pound guy, you know, I don't think his coverage skills were amazing. Like,
sure. He's also just a super athletic.
Very athletic.
Dude.
Yeah.
So I think if we worked on it, in practice, we could get by.
Yeah. I think with Taylor, like, so if I'm playing an all Drake Jackson, like, I'm just throwing the football. Like, I'm just throwing the football all the time. Like, make him cover my dudes. Like, you can't do that if you Taylor
have time.
Mays.
If you have time.
Yeah.
If you have time.
I mean, I just can huck up balls and that it would be fine. You can't do that against Taylor Mays. The thing will be, could you run all over Taylor Mays? But, like, they're so fast. I think they could close in on the, you know, the run lanes and stuff. I think he'd still be your best bet, but
I can't beat that one.
It's a hard one to, yeah.
The Drake Jackson, three different
variables. I should call Taylor right now and see, like, I'm sure he would say. He's like some funny dude.
You should just tweet this question out or put it on the P and see what people
say. I will. All right, we'll do that. We'll tweet it out. Like, hey, what's going on with that? Wait, we're already like hour and 12 in. How did this happen?
We only got a couple questions, so just run them through.
We're good. Matt, so we have a text from Matt in Huntington Beach. For Ryan and Chris, if Pete Carroll left USC for Oklahoma, would USC fans be upset as Oklahoma fans with Lincoln Riley? Seems like they won't let it go. Matt in Huntington Beach.
You're going to have to take the lead on this one.
Okay.
Because you were around.
I was around. I mean, fans were upset, but they still loved Pete Carroll, but that was going, you know, to the NFL.
Right.
Because the sanctions hit, I think that would add a little bit of animosity. Mm-hmm. And USC had, you know, within 4 or 5 years had beaten the crap out of Oklahoma. That's a hard one to picture, him going to like an Oklahoma. I don't think you would see the sort of...
Are we factoring that Twitter was not a thing at that time?
Twitter, yeah, definitely
If we're assuming Twitter was the thing.
But just the peristyle, like even on the message boards, we're seeing the Oklahoma fans kind of go and not letting it go. I feel like the USC fans, like LA fans, there would be initial like kind of pissed off at the beginning. But I don't see them like harboring this forever. Like right. This was more of like you just kind of move on and.
I'm upset. I'll just go to a concert now.
Yeah, like I'm gonna go surf and then climb a mountain and go skiing or whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't think that would be not to this level where you're just not. It's, in some aspects, this is sort of like you're defending. USC fans wouldn't have to defend like USC or Los Angeles or like you're sort of defending like your way of life if you're living in Oklahoma or you know like. Beautiful, like, you know, can be very beautiful. There's a lot of stuff, you know, going on as far as like what you want to do. Of like, hey, I love hunting, I love fishing. It's just different. It's going to be a different lifestyle. Like, you can't surf there, right? But you know, there's other stuff you can do. But some people will poo-poo it and they'll get upset about like, hey, you know, you live in the sticks or blah blah blah. And you know, and I think sometimes you're defending like the choice that you've made to be like, I like living with woods and not having a lot of people and traffic not being bad and cost of living, which is fine. Like when people make those choices, but obviously more people have made the choice to live at the coast because there's more people in Los Angeles County than like Oklahoma and Nebraska and Kansas and like all those states combined. So I think sometimes I don't think LA people would be defending their way of life. I guess if that's fair, like they're not trying to say like, look, I live in a cool place. Like people know you live in a cool place. So you don't have to really fight over that. Mm-hmm. So that might be a little bit of a factor too. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, you handled that with grace.
Thanks. okay. We have our buddy Brent in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Peristyle Podcast team. The question is for Ryan, the Ryan and Chris show. I guess that's what we are. The question is, what is going to be, as long as it's not the Chris and Ryan show, I'm just kidding.
Fair enough.
What's going to be the overall performance with the Pac-12 this football season with Coach Riley at USC? Does the Pac-12 North seem pretty wide open, even though Oregon has a new coach? I know that USC would definitely have to get by Utah to win the conference. Love to hear your guys' thoughts. Also, P.S., I was laughing listening to the podcast version of Tunnel Vision of Chris getting his tattoo. That was hilarious. Fight on. And thanks, Brett in Knoxville. Unfortunately, Brett, your question became out of date by the time we read it because now USC can win the Pac-12 without going through Utah because they can make the championship game and the North doesn't matter. But your point of the North being wide open, I think is legit because I think it is wide open. But that opens up an opportunity for like USC, if they're really good but just not good enough to beat Utah and Salt Lake City, to win you know, they don't have to win the division anymore. They just have to be the second best team. And if it's wide open in the North, meaning there's a bunch of teams with 2 and 3 conference losses, that gives USC the opportunity it would need. So kind of a second chance. Like, you win the South, whatever, you're probably going to be in the championship. If USC is the best team in the South this year, they're better than Utah because they beat Utah, they're going to be in the title game. But if they're second in what we know as the South to Utah, they still have a chance to be in the title game now, because I think the North could be wide open and have, you know, or we've seen Oregon State last year, you know, beat Utah at home and then lose to crappy teams on the road. They weren't very good away from Corvallis, but if you had to go to Corvallis like Utah did, they won all their games there. So, yeah, I think that kind of parity in the North would be a good opportunity for USC if it's sort of like a two-team race in the South.
I think overall the performance of the conference is going to look better, a lot better than it did last year. You know, you just have, because you had, you know, obviously USC being dumpster fire, they're going to be a lot better. Utah stacked, loaded, they're going to be, you know, one of the top teams in the West. Oregon still has a talented roster. We'll see what they can do. I think Arizona could be a sneaky little good team, maybe make a bowl game with all that momentum. So I think just overall, the overall performance of the Pac-12 will be better than it was in 2021. That being, there will be a lot more tension on USC and the Pac-12 in general, and they will look better than they did last season, which isn't very hard to do.
No, and that leads us, that's a great segue into our last question, Frank in Sacramento. He sent us a chart of USC's records under Clay Helton, and I think he's brought up this point before, and he's saying, stop being shocked that USC is rated so high going into 2022. Had Helton not been fired, the Trojans would have gone 7-5 in 2021. Helton was never 4-8 at USC. He stunk, and we're glad he's gone, but Riley will sleep to 9 wins because he's not starting from that big of a hole, Frank at Sacramento. So he's essentially saying that USC really wasn't a 4-8 team just because they fired the coach. They're really more like a 7-5 team, so going to 9-3 isn't that big of a jump. Where do you stand on that one, Chris?
I would change that to, if Drake London hadn't broken his ankle, they would have been a 7-5 team.
I like that. Yeah.
I think it was more on losing one of the best players in the country was more detrimental than, you know, the Clay Helton firing. That's what I think. They would have won at least, they would have at least gone to a bowl with
if
London's healthy.
And unfortunately for USC, like, that was basically their offense, just throw it to Drake London. I mean, it was not a well-coached team, and once, you know, you fire Helton, then everybody's sort of doing their own thing. But you had something reliable. You could throw the ball to Drake London, and he would catch the ball, and you would score points. That goes away, and then you have to rely on, like, coaching and development and scheme, and, yeah, that wasn't going to be USC's strong point, so... It was more about, hey, do we got some stud that we can ride? You know, and that's what USC fans have been upset the most about, is that it's been more about, you know, it's more about the talent on the field than the coaching.
Or yeah. The scheme or whatever.
Yeah. So.
Oh, and I just want to say thank you to Brett for laughing, for enjoying that live tattooing. I got some hate on that, so I appreciate the positive.
We got some hate, but whatever. I mean, we put ourselves out there. Not everyone's going to like everything we do. We try to give you guys a variety of shows. The Chris and Gerard, the two-star composite recruit podcast, has been very, very well received. So that's great. Those things go like 2.5 hours if you guys listen to those. And Chris has got to record one of those next. So we should probably wrap this up because Chris has got a lot more talking to do.
Sure. I need to get some water in me. I need to set up the call with Gerard. So I got a long afternoon ahead of me.
You do. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you were tuning in on the Parasol podcast feed or on our YouTube channel, Inside Troy, we appreciate that as well. These are a lot of fun to do. Hopefully you enjoy the video element of that. We try to put some graphics and pictures up to kind of make it so you're not just staring at our faces the whole time as we talk, because that would be kind of boring. But I think this has been hopefully it's a fun one. For all you guys, it was fun for us. That is Chris Trevino sitting over there. I am Ryan Abraham sitting right here. We're in our studio in Redondo Beach, and we love talking about USC football. So appreciate you guys all tuning in, and I hope you enjoy the show, and we will talk to you next time.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting, and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick Six, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Hosts Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick Six has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick Six is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.